Welcome to the Angus Table, the podcast from Angus Australia. I'm Scott Wright, the CEO at Angus Australia. Each episode will bring conversations with breeders, industry leaders, innovators, insights, stories and ideas that matter and hopefully add value to your Angus operation. Whether it's genetics, markets, pasture management, marketing experts or people shaping the breed, this is where the Angus community pulls up a chair at the Angus Table. Thanks for joining us.
I'm Sinclair Monroe, President of Angus Australia, and welcome members to this webinar. Very, very interesting times with Angus Genetic. Just like to thank Scott and Carl for a lot of their work that they do, and our staff at Angus Australia, and the board of directors for a lot of consideration for the strategic planning for the benefit of our members. And thank you, board, for all the work that you do. I'd just like to stress that Angus Australia is a member-based organisation. We've got over 4,000 members, and Angus Genetic has been come about because genetic improvement is a major part of our business for our members, and it's an essential tool that we need to implement for our members, to benefit our members. And also, the Angus Genetic will link, it's linking into the commercial sector, our commercial members through programs like Heifer Select and Steer Select. Also, in the future, we're looking at building Angus premiums for Angus market-based premiums for Angus cattle, and Angus Genetic will be a tool that will enable that as well. And most importantly is that we want to add value to our members and provide good genetic improvement tools at very good value prices for our members, because we realise that it's a tough industry out there and we need to provide the best tools at the best value. So Angus Genetic is a part of that simplicity and efficiency part of our business. I welcome Scott and Carl. They'll be running the webinar, and so I'll hand over to Scott now, CEO. Thanks for all the work you do, Scott, on behalf of our members, and welcome you to the webinar. Thank you.
Thank you, Sinclair, and thank you, everyone, for joining today and jumping on this webinar about Angus Genetic. I believe this is one of our most popular webinars that we've had, so that's really great that people are interested. You won't know a lot about it, so good to have the membership on. Just a few things there this morning. We've got limited time, so I'll give you the why and a bit of the strategic overview of Angus Genetic. It's largely a technical webinar, so we'll have Carl for the majority of the webinar giving you the technical detail behind it. What I would mention is that you may have questions with regards to why did you go down this path, and hopefully I'll answer some of those just in a second. But if you've got deeper questions, the appropriate people to go to Sinclair as chair of the board and myself. So please reach out to us. We try to be available. So please enjoy the webinar and we'll try to answer everything we can. Look, Angus Genetic it's exciting. It's a great day to release this. It's been really over 4 years of development. We've got almost five, and that has been across three different presidents, two CEOs, many boardroom discussions, and lots of strategic thinking. There's sometimes we can tell you all our reasoning, and sometimes we can't, and that's any organisation. It was developed for a few reasons. One of the reasons was risk mitigation for the society, because genetic evaluation is very core to what we do at Angus Australia. Our genetic evaluation through breed plan or TASTE has been controlled by entities outside of Angus Australia. So part of the thinking behind Angus Genetic was to have in-house capability. It does give us efficiencies in terms of run time, the frequency of run, cost, to be honest, and it lets us go to market for future innovation and trades quicker. And it might be that Angus Australia sees a priority in a trait or an evaluation that the industry doesn't. So we're able to do those and move quite quickly. It's very adaptive, and it lets us be more responsive to our members' needs. And really, we can control our own destiny. One of the innovations that may come about by having this capability in-house is that we may look to run different evaluations. And a good example that we've done over the last few years is Ultra Select for ultra black animals in the north. So we have partnered with International Brangus for that. And I'm not saying that we'd walk away from that, because it's worked very well, but that would, for example, give us the in-house capability to do other evaluations such as that going forward. A very important point that I do want to say, and when you have a new innovation like this or a new platform, there's a bit of chatter in the industry. Now, a very important thing is that the decision has not been made to move away from BreedPlan and to stop using BreedPlan. Now, that's a very important point that I'd like all the members to understand. It does seem confusing that we would have a parallel genetic evaluation program, but it's there for good reason, and it's there for consultation, and it's there to take members on the journey. So there is another breed society, Wagyu, that have made a different approach to BreedPlan, and they have decided to use a different model. They're a different society, and they make different decisions, different boards, different types of members. And so our board hasn't made that decision. Our board has made a decision to publicly display both results from TAGUS and Angus Genetic. And over the course of this year, you'll see some further innovations. You'll see more traits released. You might see some advances that we can't even foresee at the present time. Over the time, you'll see percentile tables released and things like that. So it is walking. I like to see it as crawl, walk, run through this process of putting Angus genetic values out into the public domain. Quite importantly, we actually started running Angus genetic maybe 12 months ago. And in September, we launched it for our commercial products, and that is heifer and steer select. What Angus genetic does is allows all those values to be displayed for all the animals on the database. So it's quite transparent. That's what we're about here. I'd like to give you an analogy. It's always dangerous to give an analogy or an example, but if you think of the banking sector, we had branches and passbooks and things like that. And then the banking sector moved into the digital age. And through the course of that transformation, we had different players come into the banking sector like ING. And they developed digital-only platforms and really transformed the way we did banking in Australia. And that's the way I like to look at this is this Angus genetic, while we get focused on the genetic evaluation and what it does to our animals and the results, it's bigger than just a genetic evaluation. It gives us in-house capability to make advances and changes as the society needs. It lets us be much more flexible going forward. So that's really what it's about. It gives our team and our members that capability. So I'd like you to think of it in that way. This is the start of capability for the society. You might like to ask more questions of Sinclair and I over time, some of your directors. The appropriate way to ask questions today is through the chat. But going forward, we've got a great technical team. So Carl Tessling, our COO, his assistant, Huntley Jensen, they're great technical people. They've got a wealth of knowledge there. We've got an extension team with Nancy Crawshaw and Brad Horn. So those people, please reach out there. When you want to think about the why, please come to myself and Sinclair, your other directors. And we've been wrestling with strategic questions. So that's the way to dissect that. I was invited to a meeting when I was being inducted as the CEO a few years ago. Now, at that stage, I was taking over from Peter Parnell. Sam White was president, and Erica Halliday and myself went to a meeting, and we were shown some capability. And I think both Erica and I walked out of the room just so impressed with where we could go with this next iteration of software. And that was very much at the start. And we've had this journey, and then the board's been very invested in terms of strategic questions, financial investment going forward. So it's certainly nothing that happened overnight. It's been a long-standing program of development. I think that's important. I think a question I would say to the membership is not why have you done this, but if things went a different way and the industry changed, the membership would have a question as, why didn't you act earlier? Why didn't you do this? So in a lot of ways, we've done this to protect the membership and give Angus Australia the capability for the future. So please remember that. Join us on this journey. And we're very open over the next 12 months for a lot of chat from members. How do you find it? What do you think we should do for the next iterations going forward? So please know this process is a part of taking you all on the journey. So welcome. I'm very excited by this. And I'd like to hand over now to Carl Tessling. And thanks for taking time out of your day to join us this morning. Over to you, Carl.
Thanks, Scott. Good afternoon, everyone. It's a real pleasure and privilege to be here. I think this is the first time that I really engage with the membership at this level. I tried to get my head around everything in the background and hit the ground running, although it's been 10 years is a long time to not be in the association. A lot of things have changed, and this is one of those things that have changed and moved forward, and it is a great privilege for me to come back and be part of all of that happening. So I'll share my screen, and we can start with my presentation and just walking through mainly the technical details about Angus Genetic. So what we will cover and which I'm going to step you through is just some of the important considerations. We're not going to spend a lot of time on those technical details, because one can really get into a lot of technical information, and I think that's not the purpose for today. I think that there's a great opportunity potentially to roll in a much more technical session, perhaps at the AGM or at another occasion, where we can pull members together and then virtually spend a day on those technical details and step through different areas as well on that. But I will touch on the technical details and the important considerations. I am going to spend a bit of time also going through the trend comparisons, and those comparisons are between TACE and Angus Genetic, of course. It's an interesting one because on the one hand, they are very different, and you'll see that in the technical considerations, that the two analyses are different. But I think it is also important that we still have a look at how the genetic trends go. And those genetic trends are really just giving you an indication of an average movement in the genetic estimation of the whole population broken down in a birth year, of course, per birth year. But I think that is really informative to understand how the two analyses compare. And there's some cases where the traits are slightly different and the trends are slightly different, but there's other cases where they're just incredibly close at that trend level. Then once we finish with that, I will go into the EBV correlation part. Of course, you can choose a whole range of different animals that you can use for that. In this case, I have decided that I'll pick the 1,500 most important bulls. And that is about trying to just represent a lot of the impact. The bulls does have the biggest impact on the population, and so therefore I chose to have a look at them. If one look at, for instance, all your cows that had calves born in the last year, that'll be slightly different. If you only look at the most important 10 bulls, that will look different again. So, but that is the reference group that I've used for that comparison to look at the correlations. Again, it is looking at an individual basis for the EBVs of individual animals and how they change. And therefore, one needs to consider that they are, how they point or not point in the same direction. And then, of course, once we finish with that, hopefully some of you would have put a number of the questions into the chat box, and Hanley would start to put them together and then ask those questions to us. So that's that being said, we will just start to get into the, if it will move. Okay, so that's the Angus Genetic important considerations. I think it is very important to realize that they are not just minor variations. They're not small little things that we've tweaked around the edges. They are very significant, and they have a big impact on the estimates of those, of every trait for every animal. And so therefore, we need to remember that we would not have expected the EBVs of these two analyses to be the same because of these very significant differences. So one of the big considerations that one need to remember is that our Angus Genetic analysis is only based on animals that are registered and in the Angus Australia database. And I will refer to TACE, and this will probably be one of the few times where I do, is that TACE, of course, combined all of the Angus Australia registered animals with all of the New Zealand Angus registered animals and run a combined analysis for those two groups of registered animals. And therefore, one need to remember that as soon as we look at the Angus genetic only, there will be animals that change because a lot of the phenotypes that would have came from New Zealand in the past just disappear. They're not available for analysis. And therefore, that animal that the EBV has been calculated in TACE does include those phenotypes, and those EBVs that gets calculated in our Angus genetic does not. And therefore, you would expect that animal to change significantly in the estimation of its genetic potential for that trait. Also, Angus genetic use a unified matrix. So we are putting the traits together in one matrix and then calculate all of the genetic parameters for all of those traits simultaneously. So all of the genetic correlations between the different traits are calculated simultaneously, and all, of course, the heritabilities have also been recalculated. So the heritabilities are different. The correlation between the genetic correlation between the traits are different. And those are genetic parameters that goes into the analysis. And if any of those change, you would see a difference from one analysis to another. And that's been seen over decades. Whenever you implement a newly recalculated genetic parameters, EBVs change. And I know, because I've been here before where that happened. And of course, then we have to explain that. And we do. We have to indicate and help members to understand that there has been more, in those cases where those recalculations happen, that there's been more data, and therefore the heritabilities change, and sometimes the correlations between traits change, and therefore the EBVs of individual animals change. So bear that one in mind. Another important one is the growth phenotype. So that is your 200, 400, 600-day EBVs. In Angus genetic, those are not adjusted for age. So they are not a 200-day adjusted phenotype. The age differences between animals are included in the model, and the model solves those differences. It is not an adjustment that we look at what's the birth weight of this animal, what is its 200-day equivalent, and then try to estimate or do estimate that 200-day weight or 400-day weight. It is that age differences are included in the model. And that is why I'm saying we will not go into the technical details of that today, but that is also a very important technical difference between the two analyses that perhaps if there's enough demand for that we could certainly include or think of an opportunity to include that in a future webinar or presentations and or symposium. And carcass phenotypes, just having a look at the previous one, carcass phenotypes are also in the same boat where carcass phenotypes are not adjusted for age and or for weight. So normally, or what we currently have in TACE is that those carcass phenotypes are adjusted for age and or also things like eye muscle area and IMF are adjusted to a weight constant carcass. And then once those phenotypes have been adjusted, then the analysis run and calculate the EBVs. So there's the very profound difference between the two analyses that one need to understand, and that is part of the reasons why the EBVs are different. So we'll jump straight into the different genetic trends. So in all of these cases, I have the Angus genetic EBVs and the trends as the green part, and TACE is the red part with the triangles rather than the circles. And in the case, and I'll step through them. So in this case, you can see that TACE actually pick up more genetic trend. So where they've started off was at a relatively less favorable position, but also then in the end they are very similar. So you can see that in this latter part of since probably the last 10 years, they're tracking really, really close. And that's good because these are the animals that's currently our breeding population. So these would be the cows that are currently available. And of course, this right at the bottom, they are starting to become our next generation of breeding animals. So that's gestation length. Yeah, they're really tracking well together. In the case of birth weight, one would say, wow, there's a big difference. There's not really a big difference because there's a kilogram difference between the two. And in this case, you can see that they track really similar, although in the case of Tace, they are almost a kilogram less than what the Tace EBVs are. And therefore, but the main thing is to look at the trend graph and how it tracked. There's obviously been a time when the birth weight started to creep up, but it's a members obviously did a great job of then containing that in both of the analysis and starting to reduce that birth weight EBV as well. So that's fantastic. In the case then of weaning weight is a little bit higher in Angus genetic, but the trends are again very much the same. There's perhaps a little bit more trend in Angus or in the Tace analysis. You can see they got wider at the bottom, but getting closer to the top. So very similar. And in the case of their yearling weight, they're tracking virtually parallel. So we see that for almost all of the growth traits, you'll see that the same in final weight as well, that they're tracking really, really close. They do get a bit closer to the end here, and that is not a bad thing. That's a good thing that the breeding animals over the last 15 years are really, really close, and the trends are very similar. Milk and maternal is an interesting one. I think that this is one of those that will need a little bit more explanation. In the case of Tace, we are actually looking at milk. So how this works is that over the years, AGBU have developed the necessary algorithms and methods to look at an animal's weaning weight and then be able to take and remove the growth component and create the maternal component. And then they use that maternal component to actually take out the milk. So they separated the milk from the maternal component. So that's how Tace works. So Tace actually focus on milk specific. In the case of Angus genetic, and that is the current thinking, if we do get a lot of feedback from members that say, no, we also want milk in Angus genetic. Of course, we can look at that and also put work in to develop that. But at the moment, what if you look at maternal value in Angus genetic, one need to realize that the milk has not been split out. The maternal component there includes the milk part of that difference in that weaning weight calf, of the weaning weight of the calf. But he also considered the maternal value of that cow. So how well she takes care of that calf to make sure that she's close to the calf and care for it and have herself available so that the calf can drink whenever it wants rather than the cow coming back and have it suckle once or twice a day. So that maternal component therefore cover both milk as well as how well the cow care for her calf. So that's a very important distinction between the two that when you look at the Angus genetic values, you need to just bear that in mind. Then mature cow weight for the two trends. You can see that in the case of Tace, that trend continued to trend up. And that is just how the models work. In the case of Angus genetic, what happened is you can see that up to that 2012-13 point, they really track parallel. And then it seems like there's now in this last decade or so, there's been a flattening where they are certainly in Angus genetic, we're picking up that there are a shift in the selection decisions that members make and which animals they keep. And therefore, one can see that flattens out. And which is, of course, I think, a great opportunity then for us to continue to have these cows that are not growing at that high rate. But as we've seen in the growth traits, all of those growth traits continue to trend up, and we have great progress in the growth, but not necessarily in the cow weight so much in Angus genetic, which I think will help us then to identify those cows that are curve benders. So that is always just remember around these, every one of these, of course, there's a huge variation, but this is the average values for that birth year to get us to that point. So there's definitely a flattening out of the mature cow weight trend. Next one is scrotal size. So one can see that they both track upwards as well. So we do have an increase in scrotal size. The trend for Angus genetic is not quite as steep. So we are not picking up just quite as much difference from and or progress, let's call it progress from 25 years ago to today. But that's minimal. That's not a big difference there. So I think both of them are showing good progress in the scrotal size EBVs. Carcass weight tracked really, really well in parallel as well. So it's back to my previous point of the weight traits does seem to track really well, except for the mature cow weight where it flattens out at the end. So it seems like it is really picking up that upward trend over the population really well. Eye muscle area. In the case of eye muscle area, we do see more trend in Angus genetic. So Angus genetic is picking up more genetic variation between animals, and therefore, and especially in the latter part, we are seeing that they are right through the whole period. Actually, it seems like about the same level of increase, but Angus genetic certainly seem to pick up a little bit more of that variation between animals. You'll note that rump or rib fat is not in, and a part of the thinking at the moment is that even for rump fat, we haven't removed and or changed rump fat. Rump fat is BH fat, and rump fat is the same for Angus genetic, and those accept that they do use this difference in how it gets calculated. But ultimately, there's a thinking that we may remove rib and rump fat and just make it carcass fat. So we want to combine those two EBVs into a single EBV. And part of the benefit of that is that we do reduce the number of EBVs, because I'm worried, and it certainly has been expressed by members, that we just continue to have more and more and more EBVs, which makes it then harder to really be able to select, because, of course, the theory of selection and making genetic progress is that you have to focus on traits to do that. And the more traits you focus on, the slower your overall progress or your progress in potentially important traits. So then by being able to combine some of these traits, we are decreasing the number, and therefore the push into some of the important traits potentially could help you to make more and faster growth or progress in those traits. Specifically for rump fat, one can see that the days have actually picked up a lot more animals getting leaner over that period from 2000 through to about 2015. Days haven't picked up that much of the animals getting leaner. But then since about that 2015 period, that it has really flattened out, and also in the case of Angus genetic, is starting to pick up a signal that they are actually animals are becoming a little bit fatter. And some people might say that's good, and I know that some people say that's bad, but I think that is good to have animals that have those reserves to be able to take themselves through some tough times as well. In the case of IMF, you would have seen by now that in that Angus genetic tab that we do not have IMF displayed there. And one of the reasons are that, again, we are looking at potentially reducing some of the traits. an IMF and MSA marble score is very closely related, or they are correlated. And therefore, in an effort to reduce the number of trades, we've decided that intermuscular fat, in future, intermuscular fat is a difficult trait to get phenotypes for. So, and of course, MSA marble score is a lot easier to get phenotypes for. So what we see is that there will be a lot more MSA marble score phenotypes coming into the system. And therefore, it makes sense to make sure that we are able to use that trait directly in the analysis rather than using that trait as a correlated trait. Because as soon as you use it as a correlated trait, you do not get the full bang for your buck. You are only using the correlation, the genetic correlation between the traits to inform the other trait. And therefore, in our case, that makes a lot more sense to then focus on the MSA marble score as our EBV in Angus genetic. But of course, intermuscular fat is currently a taste trait, and we left it that way. But therefore, they train very much the same. So I think that that's, again, a good indication that they're both pointing in the same direction. Next one is the MSA marbling. And it is interesting that in the MSA marbling, how much trend the Angus genetic pickup. But again, you can see that virtually here from probably about 2013-14, you can see that they are almost tracking exactly the same. So in this case, it's just important to realize that this is the Tace one that I have here is the research breeding value for Tace. And of course, this one, the green one, is the Angus genetic trend for what we publish as the MSA marbling. Currently, and I will touch on that because some people will probably realize that I didn't include a retail beef yield. And in the case of retail beef yield, the board have decided not to publish retail beef yield for Angus genetic. And mainly because we have just over 1,000 genotypes in our database. And also those phenotypes date back to, I think, almost before 2000. So those phenotypes are now 25 years old. And since then, we have not had any additional phenotypes coming into our system. We are currently involved in a project where we are, and UNE is investigating the use of primal cuts as an indicator of yield. And we are involved in that. And we are looking at, rather than publishing a retail beef yield EBV now, we are looking at potentially bringing that information into our analysis and then therefore develop a yield EBV rather than to publish retail beef yield at the moment in Angus genetic. So now I will look at the correlations. As I've indicated before, this is for individual animals, how their EBVs relate to each other in the two analyses. So what it does, of course, on the x-axis, it points what its EBV in Tace was, and then also was/is, and also what its EBV in Angus genetic is. I continued to use that across all of these graphs. And of course, that blue line indicates the correlation between the two, and this R square points out that correlation as well. So it points that we have a 96% correlation, for instance, in gestation length. So what that means is that the specific EBV the EBVs of these almost 1,500 bulls are highly correlated between the two analyses. So if an animal has a high correlate or a high EBV in Tace, it also has a high EBV in Angus genetic. And also then if it has a low EBV in Tace, it also have a low EBV in Tace. However, one need to look at, and the difficulty in some of these is one need to be careful, because you look at this one animal and say, wow, that animal differ a lot, and therefore that's a problem. No, it's not a problem. because remember, these other dots here, there's 1,500 of them, or almost 1,500 of them. And to look at this one and think that that makes it a problem is not the case. Statistically, that animal may have had just a certain animal considered in the one analysis not to be appropriate to have that phenotype included. But most importantly, possibly, it had New Zealand data included previously. And now that information may not be available in the analysis anymore, and the analysis therefore recalculate and say, oh, in the case of TACE, it had a value of -5, and now it has probably had a value of about, I reckon, about -2 or something like that in Angus genetic. And so that is the consideration that one need to remember, is that they are very well aligned. They're not the same, but that is a really good alignment for gestation length. If we then go to birth weight, birth weight also have a very good alignment between the two, which is great. It's almost, I shouldn't say unexpectedly high, but it is very, very high for analysis that have so many differences in the analysis, where we've had a part of the population removed. You also had genetic parameters changed, genetic correlations changed, and also still end up with a correlation that high. If we get to the weight traits, that correlation is still really, really good. There are a few animals that one can see. In this case, for instance, one can see that the TACE EBV for that individual animal was about 30, and then the Angus genetic EBV for that animal was, I don't know, probably close to about 55, 56, 57 perhaps. So that animal has quite a jump. There's other animals that also had a decrease in their EBVs, and that is to be expected. But the trend, the correlation between them, sorry, is not the trend, is very high. Same with yearling weight. So it is fantastic to see this how well they align, even though that does not make the one or the other a success. That is just good to see that these two analyses for these bulls are pointing very, very strongly in the same direction for these growth traits. If one then come to mature cow weight, there's a little bit of a change there, and that's still high. And therefore, you still have your high animals with high mature cow weights as high in the one and the other analysis, and also low. There's obviously small changes there, or there's animals that shift up and down from where they were, for instance, in TACE before. If you look at in here in TACE, all of these animals on this line were 100 before, and now you have some of them that possibly sit up to 125. And there's some of them that are now just over 50. So there are shifts there, but overall they line up really well. Again, one needs to remember that in the case of milk and maternal, they are not the same traits, but still there's a very, very good alignment between the two. And that is fantastic to see that alignment between the two, even though they are not the same trait, or they are not they don't have the same description, and therefore focus on what the genetic merit that it is actually pointing to. In the case of scrotal size, also really good alignment, and that's really a very high correlation there. Then if we get to carcass weight, there's also a very good alignment there, 84% correlation. And even though we do have the differences in how the EBVs are calculated based on the adjustment or not adjustment of the phenotypes, that is still a really, really good correlation. In the case of eye muscle area, we do have slightly lower, but that is still very, very, very good. It is not in the 90s, but 76 is a very good alignment between the two. Rump fat, 74 as well. The muscular fat is 81, and also for marble, MSA marbling is also at 80%. So I think that is it. The takeaway from all of that is that they are not the same, but they very, very strongly point in the same direction. And therefore, that is really helpful for breeders to realize that they are still moving in the right direction. So that's the end of my presentation there. So I think that we can get back and hopefully have time for a few questions.
One of the questions that's come through, Carl, is around selection indexes and whether or not there'll be selection indexes available with Angus Genetic.
Yeah, thanks, Hanley. We haven't really went into a lot of detail at the moment. Yes, of course, we can calculate selection indexes, and there are different ways. One of the challenges that we currently have with selection indexes are that they are based on economic value. So you have to quantify a economic value for every trait. And therefore, the challenge that we sit with is that members, and we've had that feedback where members say that, oh, this trait is really, and I'll use docility or temperament as an example, is really important for me. And as soon as you then say, okay, so how much is one score worth to you? And people then say, I can't tell you. And then immediately I have a problem to include that trait in the current index values because it needs to have an economic value. And that is where we are looking at the different models. There are different models of calculating indexes. And one of those are desired gains, where you look at the change you want to make rather than the economic value of every trait. You can say that I don't have to quantify the genetic value of every trait. I just know that my breeding objectives are that I really want to have super docile animals. And therefore, you include docility as an important trait for you, and it will use that then as your in your specific index to point you in the direction of animals that's suitable for that breeding objective. So that is still an area that we do want to take the board on a journey and to really get their feedback. And we'll obviously also make use of the Genetic Evaluation Consultative Committee to help inform and give us guidance and give their feedback in those areas. And yeah, that is the area that we move to in the moment. Scott, do you have any feedback on that as well? Or?
No, I think you've covered that, Carl. Yeah, great.
Another point that someone has asked is whether or not Angus Genetic is taking into account US animals EPDs. And if you could please touch on that, please, Carl.
Yep. Yeah, I didn't include it in that initial difference because it of course, we already use in our taste analysis, the EPDs are used and the same with our Angus Genetic as well. So it certainly used that as well. They do not use exactly the same methods because we had to, in our own analysis, use our own methods to be able to calculate and what we call deregress. So look at an EPD and then say, what impact should that EPD have in our analysis? And then allocate a value to that animal, especially in cases where an animal has no progeny yet. It is very important to be able to give that animal a starting point rather than them just starting sometimes below average. So yes, it is being used.
Some members have asked about the calving ease EBVs and whether or not those will be made available as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's where the board have decided that we will continue to work on those traits. I'm probably the drag on that because there's so much for me to catch up on everything and just run my eyes over and check with Melchani as well that I'm full bottle on all of those, and then also to just think through them so that one ensure that all of the technical rigor is there. But we are certainly, they are, I would say, they almost ready to publish. It is just the final checks that we need to do. And that is what Scott referred to previously as well, is that there will be additional traits rolled out, and there's several of them. There's actually a number of them that we are in the final stages of developing before we roll them out.
Yeah, I'll just add a comment there. I think those other traits that will come, they'll be some of the people on the call might have just missed the preamble at the start, so there'll be other traits added over time. There'll be percentile tables, and I noticed that was in the chat too. Percentile tables will be added, and then it's quite likely at this stage, we haven't developed the plans around it, but my intention would be that we would have a members' day in connection with the AGM, and it's likely that we'll have some seminars there for members to attend as well, and that would be the last week of May. So that there'll be more information and more traits and more capability released through the year. Yeah, thanks, Carl.
Another question that's come through in regards to scanning, Carl, with us not publishing the rib fat trait, the member has asked, should they still be scanning for that trait? Do you just want to speak to that, please?
Did I understand you correctly, just asking about the importance of scanning for ultrasound scan information? Is that
specifically in regards to the traits that we're not producing, like rib fat and IMF, just speaking to, the benefit that there still is in submitting the data from scanning?
Well, just remember that with scan data, or all data that you collect are in that trait matrix. So whenever you collect a trait, it gets plugged into that trait matrix, and that trait matrix actually then determine how much of that value or that phenotype gets allocated and or used and supply additional information for the estimate of potentially another trait. And carcass traits are a classic example. So in all cases where you do ultrasound scanning, the eye muscle area, scan eye muscle area, absolutely contribute to the carcass eye muscle area, because there's a genetic correlation between the two. And therefore, whenever you scan an animal, the system will say, yeah, okay, I have progeny that have been scanned, and therefore I can make a better estimate on the sire of those and dam of those animals, but also the animal itself for the carcass trait. Because, of course, breeding animals, once you kill him, you can't breed with him too much anymore. And therefore, scan data is really important in that regard. So, yeah, absolutely. And all phenotypes are important to be able to continue to inform our analysis. Is that it, Hanling?
No, I think that does cover most of, I've compiled most of them. And I think that covers the vast majority of them, Carl.
I think if I can just jump in there again, Scott, I know that you'll probably encourage people as well to continue to send questions through and email them to us or give us a call. Yeah, it will probably be a little bit busy, and we have been incredibly busy over the last little bit, but we certainly endeavour to get back to members and answer their questions. And we are compiling a significant question and answer document, and we will supply that through to members as well. Thanks, Scott.
Yeah, Carl, thank you. I think there was a question there I did notice with regards to how would this analysis work with multibred, and that's a good question. There's a lot of chatter around that at the present time. As yet, we don't know really how the multibred that is being talked about by MLA, what it exactly will look like. We had an initial briefing from MLA, which is a high level discussion, and as yet we don't know, and I'm pretty certain that MLA doesn't know what that will look like. So the membership will stay tuned, and as we receive more information, we'd be able to answer that question. But yeah, I thought it was just worth making a note of that.
We just had another question come in, Carl, just wanting to touch on these structural traits and how they will be incorporated into Angus genetic in the future.
Yes, thanks. That's a good question. The board have the genetic evaluation consultative committee have raised that as well. And we do have quite a bit of member feedback where members say, listen, we really like to have a good look at what Angus Australia data only looks like. Because, of course, at the moment, we need to remember that we are part of the World Angus Evaluation, where structural traits are supplied and our EBVs for those structural traits are calculated in that analysis. But there are certainly interests from our members, and we have the technical capabilities to do that as well. So that is one of the things that we will have a look at, and therefore certainly make that part of our investigations that we will continue to do moving forward. And that's certainly on the cards to have a look at that and get back to members about those. But that will be, that's part of the plan to have a good look at them as well.
I think that covers the questions in regards to Angus genetic.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, do you like to add anything more, Scott, at this stage?
No, look, I think, Sinclair, there's some really good questions there, and appreciate members asking those, and we'll certainly collate those and get them out to the membership. I did note there, just on the bottom of that questions is about the Angus app, and I note that question, and we'll try to get an answer when we're able to have a renewed app going forward. So yeah, taking that on notice, and the current app, as I believe, for those who have it on their phone, is working, but it isn't in the Apple Store. As I understand it, there's a Apple issue rather than ours. But if you do have the app, like myself, it should be working currently. But members that didn't have it on their phone previously wouldn't be able to download it. But yeah, we're working on that with the IT team. So yeah, that is a good question. Sinclair, I think that's probably all from myself. There's anything else that's come in at all, otherwise we might just hand over to you. It's been we've come close to time, Sinclair.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Hanley. Thanks for telling that. Just to finalise, thanks Scott and Carl for the presentations, the work Carl and his team have been doing in the genetic improvement space. Just like to reinforce the fact that we're a member based organisation, and we really want to look after our members' needs, and we've got over 4,000 members, some really top producers in the seed stock industry, like incredible producers, and we just want to make things, the breeding tools, are better for you, and to improve your Angus cattle and Angus-infused cattle, and it's really important that our focus is solely on Angus cattle and Angus-infused cattle. So there are a lot of other evaluations out there in the marketplace, but, Our aim is Angus and Angus infused cattle, and we believe that Angus genetic is a tool that will focus solely on Angus and Angus infused. So that's really important. And the other thing I'd like to say as president of Angus Australia is that member engagement is so important for us and for the board and for our management, that we want to work together to move the Angus breed even further forward and to develop market based Angus premiums and better genetic improvement tools in the seed stock and commercial industry. And we see Angus genetic as a tool that will really help us enable that, and really welcome member engagement. And we want to work with breeders to get the best outcomes and the best tools available. So thank you very much for attending. And this is a journey that we'll all work together with. So thank you very much to our membership. And thanks again to Scott and Carl and the staff and importantly to the directors for all their strategic thoughts going forward. Thank you, mate. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sinclair. Thanks, everyone, for joining. Thanks for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed this episode of The Angus Table. We look forward to bringing you more conversations that support your success in the Angus breed and your farming operation. I'm Scott Wright, CEO of Angus Australia, and today's Angus Table podcast is produced by Mel Strasberg. Until next time, all the best.